WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Oh, it's about that time, folks. Can you believe it is Friday already? TGIF. Man, I hope you guys have a great weekend planned. I tell you, this week just flies by. Time flies when you're having fun, and we have a packed show in store for you today. You don't want to miss it. And again, we are going to be taking your calls throughout this entire hour, as we have been throughout the week. And those who do call in will be entered with a chance to win two softball tickets to either next week's Michigan versus Michigan State's softball game on the 12th or the 13th. You get to choose what game you want to go to, what fits into your schedule. So again, do so by calling us at 517-355-9527. As we have a ton to talk about today, we'll be discussing the Minnesota win yesterday in the NIT championship. As Richard Pitino is really making headway and showing just the world that he has a little bit of dad in his genes, I guess you can say, with that huge win, Minnesota taking that and going against Larry Brown. How about the legacy of Larry Brown, now coach of SMU? What an unbelievable job both of these coaches did to get their teams to that championship game. Entertaining game last night. We'll talk about that a little bit. And also, we'll talk a little Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel. If you haven't heard the great Deion Primetime, Deion Sanders had some interesting comments to say about Johnny Football. And, of course, he's been the talk of the town for quite some time now. If you remember last week, they had the Johnny Manziel Pro Day, in which there were so many journalists to see Johnny Football just heave the football around and to see exactly how he'll perform under a little bit of pressure, as there were media members everywhere, a packed house to see Johnny Manziel and how he would perform. And he performed relatively well, to tell you the truth. So we'll discuss exactly how successful Johnny Football, we think Johnny Football will be in the NFL. Also, it's Reflection Friday, as we'll reflect on some of the biggest sports stories of the week and also give you a few weekend pick'ems as well. So you don't want to miss that. And also, I'm pretty excited about today's show because, you know, here on the show, we like to go, as we say, beyond the X's and O's and also highlight different sports that are not relatively popular, that popular in comparison to some of the mainstream sports like a football or basketball or whatnot. And today we're going to highlight martial arts. And it's a really, really interesting form of martial arts that deals with so many aspects. And one of those aspects has to do with sword work. I can't wait to get into that because I'm a big dork, ladies and gents. Anybody who knows me knows that I am a huge Kung Fu movie fan, okay? I'm a huge Bruce Lee fan. I've been watching Bruce Lee movies since I was young, man. Probably like 4 or 5 years old. My dad first popped in Enter the Dragon, okay? So I'm pretty excited about this interview. Rod Euler is his name. He actually moved to Japan to study this one particular form of martial arts. He moved to Japan back in 1994. It's a really, really cool story, and he's a really cool guy. We'll be talking to him in our second segment of Current Sports. You don't want to miss that interview. It should be an interesting one, to say the least. I can't wait for that. So much to talk about. And also, I have to remind you all that next week is a pretty cool event that is coming to right here at the Communication Arts and Sciences College as the Spartan Sports Journalism Classic. This is the second annual Spartan Sports Journalism Classic that will be taking place. Now, Steve Smith, who's a former MSU men's basketball player, now turned basketball analyst for Turner Sports, he will be in the house along with so many former Spartans who are now in the field of sports journalism. So many of them. I will be in the house as well. And a really, really cool event that we're opening up to the public has to do with a panel discussion that will be taking place, as Steve Smith will moderate that panel. It's the All-Star panel focused on covering the Olympic Games. Really cool stuff. CAS alumni like Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports, Rick Goslin of the Dallas Morning News, Joanne Barnes, who is a former Detroit Free Press sports writer, and Craig Custance of ESPN. They will share their experiences covering the Olympic Games. An MSU Athletics Hall of Famer, NBA All-Star, and U.S. Olympic gold medalist, and NBA TV sports analyst Steve Smith. Again, he will serve as the moderator and also will share his experiences of winning an Olympic gold medal with the USA men's national basketball team back in 2000, the year 2000 at the Summer Olympics in Sydney, Australia. It should be a really cool event. Again, you are all invited to attend that panel. It's open to the public, but registration for the event is requested, and you can do so by signing up online at www.cas.msu.edu/ssjc. That's for the Spartan Sports Journalism Classic. Again, that's www.cas.msu.edu/ssjc. Now, parking will be free at regular employee spaces, unsigned spaces with no meters. That's in Ramp 5 starting at 3 p.m. on April 10th. Again, the event will start at 4 o'clock. Doors open at 3:30 p.m. So, really cool stuff here. You do not want to miss that. All right, well, let's dive into the show, folks. We have so much to talk about on today's show. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this April 4th, 2014. Okay, the Detroit Red Wings, they try to make it four in a row tonight as they take on the Buffalo Sabres at the Joe, a 7:30 p.m. puck drop. Gustav Nyquist, he is an impressive company right now, folks. The Detroit Red Wings forward has scored 23 goals in 28 games after having just 63 games of NHL experience. How about that? Pavel Datsyuk, he also will make his return tonight as well. Again, that's 7:30 p.m. against the Buffalo Sabres. And looking to extend the longest home winning streak in franchise history, the Brooklyn Nets, they try to avoid a four-game season sweep at the hands of the road-challenged Pistons tonight. Now, after clinching a berth with Tuesday's 105-96 win over Houston, Brooklyn was blown out to the lowly New York Knicks the following night, 110-81, the final of that one. The Pistons will look to try and shake off a loss to the Indiana Pacers on Wednesday. They try to shake off that loss, so really just a fourth-quarter collapse in that game. Tip time is set for 7:30 p.m. tonight. Again, that's Pistons and Nets. And the Detroit Tigers hope to get back in action today after a rain-delayed debut for Anibal Sanchez against the Kansas City Royals yesterday. He looks to put a recent shoulder ailment behind him today when the Tigers open up a three-game set against visiting Baltimore Orioles. Now, Detroit has dropped four of the past five meetings with Baltimore at Comerica Park, including two of three from June 17th to the 19th. That's a 1:08 p.m. first pitch, and that should be taking place right now as we speak. It is just turned 1:08 p.m., so the Tigers and Orioles should be back in action right now, I believe, unless the rain has hindered that. I don't know. We have to check on that, but all right, and also last night was very, very cool stuff here as Travis Bader and Adrian Payne, man, they really lit up the night. Two in-state products had impressive showings at the Quicken Loans Challenge, College 3-point and slam dunk contest at SMU's Moody Coliseum. Now, MSU's Adrian Payne provided arguably the night's biggest highlight with a 360 reverse jamma. My goodness, basically bringing the ball down to his toes before slamming it home. Eastern Kentucky's Marcus Lewis ended up winning the contest. And Oakland's Travis Bader, the NCAA's all-time leader in three-pointers, he led the competition after two rounds with 45 made three-pointers. He only put up 15 in the finals, however, and lost to Baylor's Brady Heslip. So two great outings, though, for Travis Bader and Adrian Payne last night in the Quicken Loans College 3-point and slam dunk contest. It was a great night, and Adrian Payne really, he had a cool moment, too, when he acted like he was bowling a basketball. and all of his competitors fell out like they were pinned. So it was fun. It was fun stuff, a fun night. If you didn't get to check that out, I'm sure highlights are everywhere across social media. So, all right, and Creighton's Doug McDermott was a near unanimous selection as the Associated Press's Player of the Year, leading the nation in scoring with 26.7 points per game. He added 7 rebounds per contest and shot 52.6% from the field and 44.9% from three-point range. What a season for him. McDermott, he led Creighton to a 27-8 record in his senior season. He finished his career fifth on the NCAA's all-time scoring list and received 64 of a possible 65 votes. Louisville's Russ Smith received the other. So congrats to Doug McDermott. That's a great accomplishment for him. He was great all year. And after narrowly missing a spot in the NCAA tournament, Minnesota still achieved postseason success, winning the NIT with a 65-63 win over SMU at Madison Square Garden, led by Austin Hollins' 19 points, including a huge three-pointer in the final minutes. Richard Pitino's club bested Larry Brown's for the title. The Gophers will likely use the NIT as a springboard for next season when 4 starters return and Pitino enters his second year in the Big Ten. What an opening debut year for Pitino. That's impressive stuff. And the 8th annual Crosstown Showdown was not rained out compared to last year, and the Lansing Lugnuts won yet again 3-2 over the MSU baseball team. MSU came within one run twice, but were unable to pull out the win. Leading MSU at the plate was Joel Fisher, who went 2-for-2 with a double. The Spartans host Siena this weekend for their first home weekend series of the year at McLean Stadium. And the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights has opened an investigation on Florida State University from their handling of Jameis Winston, the Jameis Winston rape allegations within the Title IX laws. Now, back on December 7th, if you remember, 2012, a Florida State student said she was raped by the starting quarterback. Florida authorities announced on December 5th that Winston would not face criminal charges. But the new investigation now puts the case back in the spotlight. Interesting stuff there. And on an interview with Roland Martin, who is the former NFL Hall of Famer and Pro Bowler, Deion Sanders. This is really interesting stuff because Deion Sanders had some words when it came to Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel, of course. He said that Johnny Manziel has, quote, ghetto tendencies. Quote, I love Johnny Football. See, the reason people won't accept Johnny Football is because Johnny Football has ghetto tendencies. I love Johnny Football. So that's coming directly from Deion Sanders. Ghetto tendencies. I wish Deion would have defined what that meant more, but he's definitely turning a lot of heads there. And Deion Sanders does believe that Johnny will be drafted pretty high in this year's upcoming NFL draft. Later on the show, during our third segment, we will discuss our thoughts on Johnny Football and where exactly he will go in the draft. I personally think he will definitely go high. I mean, he had a very impressive outing at the at Pro Day. So we'll discuss that later on the show. Again, you can call in and give your thoughts on it by dialing 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Those who do will automatically be entered with a chance to win 2 tickets to go see MSU take on Michigan during next week's softball doubleheader. You will get to choose whether you want to go on the 12th or the 13th, and we will announce the winners of those tickets on Tuesday. So definitely be locked to your radios during that time. Okay, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Again, 517-355-9527 for all those who want to call in and share your thoughts on any of that. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. All right, well, Alex and Matt now join me on this Friday. How you guys doing, man? Happy Friday. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Happy Friday. Nice to be towards the end of the week. I know you're going home, Al.
Yes.
Nice.
I haven't been home in over a month, of course, due to March Madness happening every weekend. What a March it was, though, man. Yeah. I tell you.
Well, you'll get a little bit of your own March Madness on the hardwood.
Yes, right. I will be hitting the hardwood later on today with my stepdad and a few of my buddies from Detroit. We're actually hitting the hardwood later on today out in Novi. At Lifetime Fitness, a really nice facility there And I tell you what, guys, my homies back in Detroit, you think I talk a lot of junk? I don't talk that much crap unless I'm on the court. But, man, they talk a lot of trash talking left and right. You should see my group me right now as we prepare. We're supposed to be going down there around 5 o'clock. And, yeah, it's a lot of trash talking being thrown out there right now. It should be fun, though. Should be a fun weekend. Matt, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I'm just really glad that I'm 2 days away from Game of Thrones coming back.
I can't wait for that either. This weekend is going to be great. I get, you know, get a weekend off. I get to watch Game of Thrones on Sunday night at 9 p.m. I think Game of Thrones, to me, guys, even though Breaking Bad is gone now, I love Breaking Bad, too. But Game of Thrones is my favorite show right now. It's up there with it's in my top five list of all time, up there with The Wire and all of that. So can't wait for that. All right, guys. Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know if you guys caught the game last night, but the NIT Championship, Minnesota and SMU, the Gophers winning the NIT Championship. Just to talk about it really quick, you got to give props to Richard Pitino to see where he led, how he led this team throughout this year. What a first year for him, and it's so impressive. And I tell you what, I'm pretty sure his dad had a lot to do with those coaching genes out in the court, because it seemed as though this team just started to click at the right time. It really surprised me that both SMU and Minnesota didn't get a chance to make the tournament. I remember when Larry Brown was leading his squad, they were having this unbelievable year. And how about the year for SMU as well? Larry Brown really breathing life into this program. Larry Brown, of course, I remember when he got fired by Michael Jordan. I don't care what you say. I mean, Michael Jordan would go on record and say it was a mutual thing where they said, okay, it's time for us to go separate ways. But no, Larry Brown, actually, well, I don't know if you guys saw the Real Sports with Brian Gumbel piece on Larry Brown. If you haven't, it's unbelievable. But they sat down with Larry, and Larry says, no, it wasn't mutual. Michael fired me. So, and he took it a little hard. I mean, he went on to say that, hey, this is the greatest player in the game firing you. It was definitely a big slap in the face, and he felt pretty awful about it. But Larry Brown is such a gym rat that even when he did get fired from the Bobcats and he went home, his home is really close to Villanova, and he would constantly sit in on Villanova's practices. The head coach over there, I forget his name. His name, is it Rice? I think Coach
Jay Wright.
Jay Wright, exactly. Yeah, he would go there and just kind of just be a gym rat. I mean, he was there before the head coach was during every single practice. It was unbelievable. So then SMU decided, oh, they needed a new coach. They found Larry, and Larry just totally changed this entire program around. And it helps with the new facility today. I don't know if you guys have saw the facility last night. It's a really, really nice facility there. They actually held the college all-star contest there last night. But, man, what a moment, though, for you have such a young coach in Richard Pitino going against a legend and Larry Brown, two programs that really they put on the line last night. And it was great to see that for both programs, because Larry Brown, I thought both of those teams definitely, I could have seen them both in the tournament this year.
Yeah, and they could have made noise.
Exactly. Oh, I mean, a lot of noise.
And the biggest thing about the NIT is, do teams actually want to be there?
I've always asked myself that every single year.
And it's huge if they do, and you usually see, because there's usually, you know, two of the top seeds will fall out early because the players just aren't really invested in it, because, you know, the disappointment of missing out on the big tournament kind of turns some teams off and they shut it down for the year and focus on next year. But I think it's good when teams are engaged and want to win, because you can use that as a springboard for next year. And I think Pitino especially is going to do that, and, you know, Larry Brown at SMU.
Wow.
I mean, had anyone ever really paid any attention to Southern Methodist basketball before this year?
None.
And now they're getting a top five recruit for next year.
Right, exactly.
They're building something quick. I mean, I think they're going to be a factor in the American Athletic going forward for sure.
Right.
But as far as Minnesota is concerned, I think you couldn't end the year any better. I think it's almost better to win the NIT than lose in the first round of the NCAA tournament.
Right, exactly. Alex?
Yeah, no, and especially in his first year, like you were saying earlier, what a bang-up job he's done. But look at some past NIT winners. Michigan under Amaker, when they won the NIT, they came back the next year and did not do very well. So, yes, it's a great way to end the year, but I don't think it's necessarily an indicator for the following year, because a lot of things could change. Sure, Minnesota is way different than Tommy Amaker's Michigan squad.
Yeah, I was just about
granted,
to say that. Yeah.
Granted, yeah. But I don't know if we could. I don't know if I personally would put it that high on the pedestal, in granting how well they're going to do next year. I wouldn't put it as an indicator that they won the NIT. They were upset about the tournament. Look, they lost a very disappointing game against Ohio State in the tournament. Mm-hmm. Very disappointing game against an Ohio State team who was way more inconsistent than the Gophers were throughout the entire season.
I'll tell you what, the overall body of work for me, when I looked at Minnesota, I didn't think it was – the thing about – the reason why Minnesota, to me, didn't make the tournament is that compared to other teams that were selected, they just simply didn't accomplish enough during the regular season for me. And I thought that they had the talent there. Obviously, they had the talent there. I mean, they just won the NIT championship. It's just certain games, closing out certain games, they didn't gel at the right time. And when you looked at the overall body of work compared to the other teams that were selected, the Gophers didn't do enough. You know what I mean? They needed more standout games to say, okay, they need to be selected here. And I think they have a great foundation now to build upon.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, I would argue that a team like maybe Nebraska or a team like Ohio State didn't do as much. I think that if Minnesota won that last game against Ohio State, if they just beat Ohio State, I think they would have found their way in. I really do.
Yeah, it's certainly possible because that's another tournament team that you beat. I mean, you can kind of look at that as a big win in your season. And like you said, Al, they just didn't have enough of those.
Right, exactly.
And as far as an indicator of next season's success, I mean, obviously, year to year, things are different. But to win it in the first year as the head coach, I think that instills some confidence in the players that their coach knows what he's doing, mm-hmm. and that if they kind of follow his lead, they'll be trending in the right direction. I mean, he is a Patino.
You know, Son of a Hall of Famer.
It's going to take time to kind of implement his system, and it seems like at least at the end of the year, things sort of started to catch on, and players started to get it. So I think going into next year, I mean, they return four starters. I mean, they still got a Hollins, at least one of them.
Right.
I mean, they'll be dangerous next year in the Big Ten. And they lost some close games, like you said. They were almost like an Iowa light, where they just didn't get over the hump enough times to get in the tournament. But they're certainly trending in the right direction.
They definitely are. And you know, guys, really quickly, but before we hit the first break, the legacy of Larry Brown, guys. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, one of the greatest coaches ever, the only coach to win a national title in college, and then to win one in the NBA. With, of course, the Pistons back in 2004. You know, there was a time where a lot of people looked at Larry and said that Larry's washed up. You know what I mean? Especially that stint that he had when he coached the Knicks. You guys remember that. And, of course, then he went to the Bobcats. I mean, throughout his entire career, he's coached 14 teams. Can you believe that? That's unbelievable. That's a long list. But I think when you look at Larry Brown, and if he has the pieces there, if he has some framework there, I just honestly think when you talk about New York, and you talk about the Bobcats, they didn't have the framework there to really build upon anything. But when you give him something, he can turn it into gold. And I think the legacy of Larry Brown has went from goose to gold in about just like that, the blink of an eye. I'm really happy for Larry.
You said from goose to gold?
From goose to gold, baby.
I don't know if I'd put him at a goose. Man,
I think
that's pretty low.
The perception, when especially when he got fired with the Bobcats, I mean, if you read the headlines left and right, they were like, oh, Larry Brown's washed up. He needs to retire. That's what people were saying.
You said he was hurt. I don't know if I'd be hurt because Michael Jordan might be the greatest player ever,
right,
but he's maybe one of the worst owners in professional sports.
That's
so
what
I
was
wouldn't
thinking
take that
too.
Personally at all.
Yeah, well, if you look at the document, guys, you definitely get a chance to look at it because Brian Gumbel sat down when it was a really well-done piece. But, yeah, I mean, when they brought up the time where when Mike fired him, or like I said, Mike went on the record and said, oh, it was a mutual thing. You know, Larry wanted to leave. Larry says no. Mike fired me. I don't care what he says. And, you know, he said it hurt him because Larry, I don't know if you guys know the relationship with Mike and Larry. I mean, Larry looked at Michael as like, you know, he's the greatest ever. He has so much admiration for Mike. And it hurt him that, quote, the greatest player to ever play the game fired me. That's why it hurt him. But, yeah.
But the funny thing is, see, we are Pistons fans, I'd say.
Oh, we are. You already know. I bleed red, white,
right.
and blue, baby.
And I feel like if you're talking to someone who was a Philadelphia 76ers fan during the Larry Brown era, I think even the gold perception right now with SMU would be a bit different. I think that being Pistons fans, we do look at that championship as, wow, he took that team. But someone from the outside, a Philly fan, might say, look what Joe Dumars built at the time. Look at what Rasheed Wallace did coming in midseason.
You know, I will say this, though. When you bring up that, I will say that Rick Carlisle could have coached that team to a championship.
Exactly. And that's
150%. Yeah.
I'm just saying.
And that's my
point.
It was. I think that was more of a team. Not to say Larry Brown didn't do a great job or that he wasn't a good coach, but I think it was more that team. And I think that he's not up in the ranks with top coaches ever. But
you don't think so?
No.
Oh, I disagree with that.
I think he's there.
I disagree with that. He's one of the greatest of all time.
All time?
All time.
I don't think so.
He's a Hall of Famer. Larry Brown's resume.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Oh.
But I think there are many coaches that have won more championships than him, that have had more success at the professional level than him, and that have overall have been more of a player's coach than he is.
So if you make your top five basketball coaches of all time, Larry Brown's not in that list.
He'd be a slim five.
So he does make it, but he'll be five.
I don't think he will. I mean, we'd have to do that in the top five, too.
I would love that. It may be next week, but Larry Brown is definitely he's a number three or two.
Look at all the great coaches. You got Phil Jackson, Harbaugh.
But, I mean, Larry Brown is doing it at college and the NBA.
But
you know
other coaches have, too.
Not like he's the only coach to ever win a college national championship and an NBA championship.
True.
The only one.
True.
No one's ever done that.
But great coaches, have had similar success at the college level.
National championship is different, though, Alex. Matt.
I think Larry Brown is one of the best coaches ever. And the thing with him is he needs to be in the right situation. He needs to be in the situation where he is the guy. He needs to be the one voice in the locker room. I think in Charlotte, maybe the problem was that Michael Jordan is such a magnetic personality and such a powerful figure that they're kind of butting heads.
And
almost.
He's too hands-on.
Exactly. And, you know, when he was in New York, he had kind of players who are perceived as malcontents. But when he has a young team that he can kind of build up, that's when he's at his best. When he has a team like the Pistons, who were noted for being as unselfish as they were, who were going to buy in, who were going to, and I hate that I'm going to say this, play the right way, because
right,
that's going to be on his tombstone. But, you know, when he has a team that buys into that, and right. I think you see it at the college level much more often because, you know, obviously they aren't these established stars who are getting paid millions and millions of dollars.
Right.
When he can mold a team like that, he's one of the best ever, if not, you know, maybe the best.
If not the
ever.
Best. Yeah. I mean, to see the teams, the amount of teams that he's just taken from the dumps and made him into just swan songs. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean,
but he is kind of that guy, like you said, he's too hands-on, where at times, especially at the NBA level, he'll wear out his welcome.
Right.
Kind of like a Doug Collins, where for the first year, big improvement, and then by year three, they're ready to run him out of town.
Exactly. I can definitely see that, too. So, all right, gents, great discussion. All right, let's hit the break. When we come back, man, I tell you, I'm very excited for this interview because everybody who knows me knows I'm a huge martial arts geek, okay? I'm just that guy. Bruce Lee, Chuck Norris, I mean, I can go on and on. You don't want to miss our sit-down with Rod Euler, who has just entered the studio. You don't want to miss that. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec.
Is string theory just the latest fashion? Quantum mechanics nonsensical? I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday for a talk with Sir Roger Penrose. He calls cosmic inflation a fantasy. Plus, could the political conflict in Crimea hurt Russian-U.S. cooperation in space? That's all on Science Friday from PRI.
That's Science Friday, coming up at 2 o'clock.
Hi, I'm WKAR's Emmanuel Berry, host of Current State Weekend. Spend your weekends with me as I highlight Current State's weekday stories and explore mid-Michigan's vibrant arts and culture scene. We'll cover from the latest at Wharton Center to community events. Tune in Saturdays at 11 a.m. and Sundays at noon for WKAR's Current State Weekend.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, let's get to our guest for today's show. You know that here on the show, we try to go beyond the X's and O's. We talk about that all the time. And think outside the box when it comes to sports that aren't always in the popular spotlight. And today we bring you one that is just that. Pretty cool stuff, I must say. Now, he moved to Japan in 1994 of January to specifically look for a martial art called, and I know I'm going to mess these names up, but I believe it's called Daito Ryu Anchuzitsu. I probably just butchered that. He's going to correct me in a minute, okay? Now, he was fortunate to find it a true master to train under that as well. Now, he was also lucky to find a sword school was also attached to the Daito Ryu. The sword school is called, I'm going to mess this up too, Onohaitu Ryu Kintusisu. I definitely messed that one up too, but hey, he studied very hard in Japan and achieved Sheehan license in the Daito Ryu, and a full Miku license in the Itu Ryu. He's going to explain all these words in just a sec, okay? Now, he ran his own dojo in Japan and taught seminars in Japan, England, Canada, and the U.S. He also met his wife in the dojo training. They actually run a small dojo in East Lansing. It's my pleasure to welcome Rod Euler to Current Sports. How you doing, Rod?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me today.
No problem. Now, first of all, Rod, please correct me here. Sure. I just butchered a lot of names there. Please explain exactly what is Daito Ryu Atsutsutsu. I'm saying that totally wrong.
Right.
Correct me and explain how you got involved in it.
All right. Well, the name is Daito Ryu Aiki Jujutsu.
Yeah, I'm way off.
Yeah,
way
you're off. Close enough for someone who doesn't speak Japanese. You're close enough. And then the sword school is called Onoha Ito Ryu Kenjutsu.
Okay, gotcha. How did you get involved in this? Why did you know, what exactly is it, first off?
Well, what it is the Daito Ryu Aiki Jujutsu is an empty hand art that mostly deals with joint locks, throws, drops. It's self-defense. It's over 1,000 years old, and it's a very classical style, very linear style.
Uh-huh. Yeah. How did you get involved in it?
Well, you mentioned Chuck Norris earlier, and I saw a movie. He went to Japan or something like that, or was shipwrecked, and I thought, man, I got to go to Japan and study like that. And basically, I made my dream come true.
Gotta love that, Missy. Yeah. I'm a huge, like I said, Chuck Norris, Bruce Lee, all those guys. I'm a huge dork when it comes to those guys. Love it. Now, I gotta ask you, what piqued your interest in this form of martial art, and to the extent that you actually wanted to move to Japan? You really got involved with this, right?
Well, Daito Ryu, it's not too well known. I mean, not outside the classical martial arts anyway, but a lot of people know the system called Aikido.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of that.
Right. So Aikido actually comes from Daito Ryu. And I was studying, I did come here to MSU, but I actually graduated from EMU, so don't hold that against me.
Okay, no, you're
It's
fine.
Still green and white.
As long as it's not maize and blue, we're good.
Right,
here.
That's right. Okay. Still green and white. I studied Aikido at EMU, and I said, I want to go to Japan and study this. And they said, well, if you could find the roots of it and bring it back to us, that would be great. And that's exactly what I did.
Wow, gotta love that. Now, you being in Japan, I mean, I actually gotta ask you, how many different forms of martial arts are studied in Japan? I'm pretty sure it's through the roof.
There's so many. I mean, there's modern, there's classical. There's self-made ones. Yeah, there's a lot. I couldn't put a number to it.
The list is endless, I'm sure. Yeah. And you actually moved to Japan. How long were you in Japan, Rod?
Over 15 years.
15 years. My goodness. Explain the culture there. I mean, growing up here, of course, in the States, and then totally, forming a life out there in Japan. I mean, what was the toughest thing culturally to get adjusted to for you?
Well, Japanese tend to be a little more stoic than Americans are. You know, we're pretty loud. We're pretty boisterous and things like that. And, Japanese are quite subdued. And so, keeping your voice down in public and things, that's kind of, stuff you have to be aware of. When you're on the train, you don't talk like this loud. You whisper to your friend or whatever.
Do you? Okay. So just, kind of just more conservative, I guess you could say.
Yes.
In a way. Yeah. For you, when you went over there, did you already know Japanese or did you have to learn?
Yeah,
what you got
I studied here at MSU. And then I graduated with a minor at EMU.
You
so
did.
I did know Japanese before I went, but book knowledge is not the same as reality. So you can study hard in the textbook, and I got A's. I mean, I thought I knew it. When I went over there and someone said something to me, I was like, what the heck was that? Because there's a lot of dialect there, too. And they only teach, the standard Japanese in the textbook. So where I was in Osaka, they have an Osaka dialect, and I was lost.
Just lost, huh?
Lost. Until your ear adjusts, and then you're okay. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, when you went there in Japan, Rod, did you go solo dolo, just you, by yourself?
Dude, I had $1,000 in my pocket, and I got on the airplane and left.
That is dedication, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Now, for you, Rod, exactly. You went to Japan trying to find this certain form of martial arts, someone that could teach it to you.
Yeah.
How did you go about finding someone who knew that type of art?
Well, $1,000 doesn't go very far in Japan. Uh-huh. It's a little more expensive. You have to take public transportation everywhere. And, $1,000 doesn't last long. So I knew what I wanted to find, but I knew I had to find a job first. So I finally found the job, and then I had the secretary, do the Japanese in the phone book and so on and look stuff up for me. And I finally found a school that was a kind of branch school of the Daito Ryu, and then I found my teacher after that.
Wow. Now, what job did you attain before going on that quest to try to find that sort of
I taught English.
You taught English there. Wow. That makes sense then. Yeah. Okay. Now, I want to talk about your master now. Describe your master who trained you in the art, and how many years of training did he have under his belt?
Wow. He's been at it a long time. I mean, he's got probably 40 years now. Basically, he got in a fight, and some guys had wooden swords, and they were hitting him with the wooden swords, and he
it's like a movie, like a Bruce Lee type of movie.
Basically, and he was just blocking with his arms. Well, at the end of it, his arms were all swollen and bruised up, and he thought, well, there's got to be a better way to defend against something like that. So he went out and he found Daitoryu. And then he, this was all in Osaka, but the Grand Master actually lives in Hokkaido, which is a northern island, the very top north. It's like Michigan cold up there. It's UP cold up there.
Oh, my goodness, right.
So he started traveling back and forth to study with the Grand Master, and, he got certified from the Grand Master.
Yeah. Wow, that is unbelievable. Right now, what is the training like? When you first started your training, how rigorous is the training? I mean, when you first, met this master, what did you have to go through to really?
It's really slow. It takes a long time to get trusted, especially in the classical stuff. There's no competition. It's a lot of joint locks, and it's too easy to break someone's arm, if you're in competition, right? Mm-hmm. And it happens in MMA, too, right? People get broken. So, we try to avoid that. We don't want to hurt someone on purpose. So we avoid the competition. But so it takes a long time to get the trust, to learn the real techniques, and, it starts with etiquette. So you learn how to bow in first. I mean, it's really step by step. I think a lot of people just couldn't take it. That's why my dojo is so small and we don't advertise. Because I think I hate to see people come in, they buy a uniform, they spend some money to get in, and then we never see them again because they don't want to bow in. They want to see the good stuff from day one, and it just doesn't work that way.
It's baby steps, right? Day by day.
You were talking about basketball. You don't start jump shotting from day one, right?
Exactly.
You learn how to dribble first. So it's just like that.
Exactly, exactly. Now, for you, Ryan, like you talk about, learning how to bow. So your first week of training, just take us through, just our listeners out there, you get involved with this sport, you find your master. What is the first week like for you?
Wow, it's so long ago, I don't even remember. I remember the good times now, but
just the good times, right?
In classical martial arts, you walk differently. Samurai, bushi, they didn't walk the way we walk. So when you step forward with your left foot, your right arm comes out. So you're always, people can't see in the radio, I'm trying to demonstrate. Your hips and your shoulders are always, they're countering each other. If your left hip comes forward, your right shoulder comes forward, and vice versa when you walk. You notice the next time. Well, in classical Japanese, they didn't do that. They wore different kind of, not uniform, but they wore different kind of clothing that were very tight around the hip. So when the left leg went forward, so did the right shoulder. And so so it's a completely different type of walking. And there's this particular name for it. It's not that important. But basically, I learned how to bow in and walk.
Wow.
I had to retrain on how to walk.
How to walk. That is unbelievable stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with Rod Euler, who is an expert, in the form of martial arts in Daichu Ryu Achijitsu. Hopefully, I'm butchering it still. I'm butchering it still, Rod. But really cool stuff, Rod. Now, how long did it take you to achieve your licenses in this art?
Took me about 12 years to get the Shihan license in the Daitoryu Aiki Jujutsu, and it took the full 15 to get the Menkyo. And I'm the only one that's been promoted. I mean, I'm the only one that made it that far because I'm the only one that was dedicated enough to really push through it and learn how to cut and things like that. Other people are just doing it as part of the Daitoryu because they're so interrelated. If you can move well with a sword, you can move well with empty hand and vice versa.
That's unbelievable, Rod. For you, what's the test like to achieve that license? I mean, what do you go through to get that license?
Well, one of the tests was if you people in the radio land just take your thumb and middle finger and make a circle with both your hands. We went out to a bamboo forest, and my teacher gave me a sword. He said, "Now go cut that." That was one of my first tests.
Really?
Yeah.
That was one of the first tests.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and then what pursued after that? Who gives this test too? Is it the grandmaster?
The grandmaster has passed away. There is no grandmaster anymore. So,
Gotcha.
The tests are demonstrating your techniques and things like that. It's for the sword. It was kind of informal, really, because my teacher's really more focused on the empty hand side of it. That's where his passion was, and my passion is sort of
On the sword.
On the sword, because it's, you know, the sword is fascinating. So
that's what I want to ask you about now. I want to kind of segue into that. First of all, Rod, what type of sword are we talking about? Are we talking about, you ever seen Kill Bill?
Yeah, they're sort of like those, but not like those. Fancy. Those are like, you know, fancy.
Those are hot. I got to get me one of those, by the way. But
I like the actresses that swung the swords. But.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Now, Rod, what kind of swords are these? So do they look like that? Or
Yeah. They're similar to that. I mean, that's what, you know, like a samurai sword, a katana or something like that. Yeah.
Gotcha. So you're training in the sword. How did that come about?
Well, when I first started, I didn't know that there was a... it's kind of an inter-school. I don't want to go into the history of it. Probably don't have time for that. But the sword school is part of the empty hand. Because in Japanese martial arts, sword always comes first. The sword was almighty. So if you can do sword, you can basically pick up any other Japanese weapon, a classical weapon, and you'll be able to learn very quickly. Because all those weapons are designed to defend against the sword.
Right.
So if
right.
you know sword, you can do everything else, basically, in Japanese martial arts, classical
wow.
martial arts. Yeah.
Okay. So that's kind of like sword the foundation right
yes,
there.
Yes. Yeah. Sword is first.
Gotta love that. Now, Rod, you know, through your training and your time in Japan and whatnot, that experience for you, I mean, what type of things did you learn that not only helped you, of course, in combat, of course, learning that type of style, but in your everyday life as far as discipline, that kind of thing, what do you take away from that time period?
Well, don't give up. I mean, you get frustrated, you reach plateaus, and this is like in any sport. You know, you practice real hard, and you don't see any self improvement, right? Mm-hmm. You got to push through that, and that's basically, you know, if I had to say anything like that, comparing it to a modern sport, that's it. You just got to push through those plateaus and just keep reaching to climb that mountain.
You know, and it's really cool during that experience. You got a chance to actually meet your wife.
I did.
That time. How in the world did that happen, Rod?
I met her in the dojo, and I was
you get butterflies just talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, I was just a little white belt, you know, and know nothing. And here she comes in. I didn't know her. I thought, well, we're practicing this technique. I'm going to put this little girl down. And I got my butt whooped. And that's as nice as I can say that on the radio.
Right. Gotcha. So after that, what happened?
I thought she was hands off, but actually she was attracted to me, and she actually asked me out, and we started dating.
She asked you out. Man,
she
I wish that happened more often nowadays. Yeah. Man, that would make life a lot easier. Well, that's great stuff. And how long have you guys been married?
Over 16 years now.
16
years. My best
years.
Friend in the world.
Gotta love that. That's great stuff, Rod. And you guys teach seminars, right?
Yeah,
here
we do
in Lansing.
We just came back from Pennsylvania. We taught a very intensive 12-hour seminar. Mm-hmm. In South Central Pennsylvania. We do teach a local dojo here. We just have a few students that want to give it a try. So.
Right. And when you met your wife, did you guys meet in Japan?
Yeah, we met in Japan.
Wow, that's an unbelievable story here. All right, well, how can people who are kind of interested in this type of thing, how can they get involved, Rod?
Well, I guess they can email me. Is it all right to give out my email?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Go ahead.
So it's RGUHLER@MAC.com. Yes, I'm a Mac user.
There you go. Yeah, he's a Mac user, guys. And don't expect to just dive right into it. I'm baby steps, right, Rod?
That's right. That's
baby
right.
steps. Gotta love that. There you have it. Rod Euler, expert in the field of martial arts. I won't even attempt to say the name again, okay? Him and his wife, they run a dojo right here in East Lansing. Rod, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. All right, ladies and gents. Well, let's hit the second break. When we come back, we'll talk a little Johnny Football. Yes, Johnny Manziel. And how successful will Johnny Football be in the NFL? We'll talk about that. We'll also reflect because it's Friday and also give you a few weekend pick-ems. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec.
This year marks the 50th anniversary of the passage of the Civil Rights Act. On the next Fresh Air, Todd Purdom tells the story of the political and legislative battle to pass it. Purdom is the author of the new book, An Idea Whose Time Has Come. Join us.
That's Fresh Air, coming up at 3 o'clock. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Man, How cool was that, guys? That was really cool. That was like some Enter the Dragon.
You might have to move out to Japan now, Al.
I know. That just lit a fire in me. That was like some Enter the Dragon, Return of the Dragon type stuff, man. Oh, my God. If you missed it, folks, we just had Rod Euler in the Current Sports studio. He is a expert in the field of martial arts, in the particular field of Daicho Ryu Achijutsu. I've been butchering it all day, but man, really cool stuff. He actually lived in Japan for 15 years and studied the art of martial arts. Unbelievable stuff. Unbelievable stuff there. All right, guys. Well, I tell you what, Johnny Football really turned some heads during Pro Day. And I tell you guys, when I heard about this, I mean, when I saw Johnny Football, I woke up that morning, I remember. It was last week, and turned on ESPN, and everybody from Fox Sports 1 to ESPN, if you go on the net, I mean, they had a live stream of the entire thing, just focused on Johnny Football's Pro Day and to see how he would perform at Pro Day, which he did pretty well. He came out, he actually addressed it, this is different, I've never seen this before. He actually addressed every media member that was there, which was, I couldn't even count how many media members were there. He addressed them, he had on, you know, the camouflage shorts, he had on the pads and actually a helmet. And he performed pretty well, ladies and gents. He definitely impressed a lot of people. Now, the knock on Johnny Football is that, first of all, is he tall enough? You know, his sporadic plays, you know, he's got kind of like the Brett Favre improvisation out there on the field, you know, where he's not fully, you know, it's not like your typical black and white quarterback where it's just, you know, he makes a pass. All right. They go to the line. I mean, he can scramble a little bit. I mean, Johnny Football does it all on the field, and he's very impressive. If you ask me, our question that we're posing out there is just exactly how successful will Johnny Football be at the next level? If you want to call in and weigh on it, 517-355-9527. And, you know, when you talk about this conversation, guys, a lot of people have been comparing Johnny Football to Russell Wilson, which for me, I don't know if that's an accurate comparison, just because I feel as though Russell Wilson and the way Johnny Football play, they're totally two different players.
That seems like just a pure height comparison.
Exactly. That's exactly what that is.
Comparison.
I totally agree with you.
Now, my view on this, Al, is I think he will be successful, but my view on this is very out there, probably not expecting, but I think he's going to be similar to Tim Tebow, and here's why. Both quarterbacks, not black and white quarterbacks. Tim Tebow, very, very impromptu with the ball. He's going to run a little bit outside the pocket. Very different frames. Tebow is 6'5", something like that. Manziel's 6 foot. But both of them, a lot of off-the-field stuff that is very attractive to fans. Tim Tebow with his relationship with God. Johnny Manziel with a lot of his stuff off the field.
Not to mention Drake. His relationship with Drake.
Oh, boy.
It's hilarious to me.
Oh, brother.
But a lot of them, both of them, have become football faces and celebrities. Outside of just skill, I mean, granted, both of them were great in college, but both of them have that personality outside of college. Football. I think that Johnny Manziel is most comparable to Tebow. I mean, I just remember Skip Bayless. He's a winner. He's a player.
Okay, Johan, Alex, you're talking about just the comparison with Johnny Football and Tebow in the regards of off the field. Their persona off the field. Because they play nothing alike.
Both of them very, very hyped in college. Tim Tebow had a very early successful pro career. Didn't pan out. I think Manziel is going to go in that similar fashion, and that he's going to have a pretty good pro career to start. He's not going to pan out for whatever various reason, and I think he's going to find his niche within football. He is Mr. Football.
But as far as their play goes, they play nothing alike.
You asked football, Al. You never said the way they play.
When I talk about success,
success is measured outside of playing.
I'm talking about success on the as far as
do you think
as
Tim Tebow's successful?
Heck no. That's why he's not in the league anymore.
He's very successful. He's made a name for himself.
I'm talking about on the field. I'm talking about within the game.
So you're talking performance-based.
Yes, performance-based.
Okay,
yes.
Now that's a different question, Al. You said success in football.
Look at our discussion yesterday. Look at Spencer Haywood
in basketball. He wasn't the best player.
Okay, I need to define my questions here more often.
Exactly.
All right, listen, I'm defining it right now. As far as his success goes on the field, whether he'll be successful, whether he gets some rings, that type of thing.
There you go.
Matt, were you confused by that?
I wasn't terribly
it's okay.
I wasn't confused.
But I see where Alex is
I
going.
I see where he's going. I definitely see where he's going.
I was just an open thinker with this. I was looking out outside the X's and O's. Outside the X's and O's.
But Alex, I feel like, you know, Tim Tebow's off-field persona, it was such a negative in his days in the NFL. It was such a negative. Yes, teams got scared away by that because you're getting this circus whether or not he performs on the field. Fans are still clamoring in their Tebow 15 jerseys. Get him on the field. Even if when he does get on the field, he doesn't win games anyway.
Right.
It's this thing where you have to deal with this hoopla, and not to mention the fans, but the media as well. I mean, he's going to be the apple of everyone's eye for his rookie year, no matter what he does. Even if he doesn't see the field at all, there's still going to be Ed Werder at Texans practice or wherever he goes reporting on, well, Johnny Manziel sneezed today. And,
exactly.
You know.
That's the thing. That's why I can see both sides of your guys' argument. But I can see Alex's side where, if you look at Johnny Football, he's talking about the relationship with Drake that he has.
He's a circus, too.
Let's be honest here. Tebow put butts in the seat, okay? Tebow sold some tickets. And I'm sure Johnny Football would do that as well, just because of that aura that Johnny Football has about him, the hoopla around him. He's definitely going to get paid. He'll probably have some sponsorships here and there. But as far as on-the-field play goes, I thought that Tebow shouldn't have been playing the quarterback position at all. I thought Tebow had absolutely no—he couldn't throw at all. His accuracy was totally out the window. He could rush a little bit. He could run a little bit, put it on the floor, and, you know, get a few first downs and make things happen on the ground. But as far as his overall quarterback stats and the way he could manage a game, Tim Tebow wasn't a quarterback. I don't even know if he was a football. He was that position right there was not for him. Quarterback was not what
right.
Tebow should
in terms
playing.
Of his play and his niche at his position, I agree.
Right.
Tebow, very unorthodox, more of a fullback kind of quarterback.
They tried to make him a QB. He tried to make himself a QB.
It makes sense because when you're in a goal line situation, there aren't any quarterbacks besides Tim Tebow who could jam the ball up the middle with linemen and get nailed and still hold on to the football. You know what I'm saying?
Like a Ben Roethlisberger or something like that.
Even more.
Right.
But I agree. Very different playing styles. And I definitely see where Matt's coming from with the whole Ed Werder reporting and the Tim Tebow circus.
It's going to be crazy.
Manziel in a little bit of a different light. Both circuses, but in a different light. But in terms of playing style, who I would compare him to, I mean, I see a little bit of Drew Brees in him, to be honest. I mean, he's both of them pretty accurate quarterbacks. Both of them pretty mobile. Manziel maybe more.
I see Vic and Favre.
I think that is just height. I think Russell Wilson is a more appropriate comparison than Drew Brees is because
Why?
They both have that elusivity. They can both move around the pocket and make things happen. Drew Brees, he does to an extent, but he stays in the pocket.
True.
Russell Wilson and Johnny Manziel are both at their most dangerous when they can escape out the ends and make things happen down the field.
I totally agree. I can see that.
But I think when you look at Johnny Football. I kind of see a comparison of Brett Favre mixed with a little Michael Vick in him. Because if you look at Brett Favre, of course, Brett Favre, we all know he has the record for interceptions in the league. Johnny Football, to me, but the thing about Brett Favre is he was accurate to a degree, too. I mean, Brett Favre could definitely score touchdowns. He could, you know, zip that ball in there with some zip on it. He could put it on the rope. I mean, he was unbelievable. And he improvised so well, which that's it. Johnny Football, that's all he did throughout his career. I mean, when plays would break down, how many times we see Johnny Football when he thought he was down, he would get out of something and make a crazy throw down the field. I mean, that was Brett Favre all day. And then when he did get out the pocket sometimes and get in the open field, he had a little speed to him, which a la Mike Vick. So I see more of that than, like I said, I think the Russell Wilson comparison is just totally hype to me. I mean, because and I'm looking here online right now on ESPN.com, they have him listed at 6'1". That's a generous 6'1 right there, I think. Johnny Football and Russ, they're both short QBs. Russell, definitely they both had that elusivity. Like you said, I mean, like that's how Mike Vick was when he played. But as far as their overall pocket presence and how they read the field, I think they read the field in two totally different contexts, in my opinion. That's what I've seen.
Russell Wilson is certainly a more complete player.
Right.
I mean, no doubt about it. And the thing with him is he's got the arm strength and accuracy to boot. I mean, he played baseball in college. He was a, you know, 4-year college player. Mm-hmm. He was an experienced guy by the time he came into the NFL. Johnny Manziel's a little bit greener, obviously. He didn't have as much time in college. He is the circus, but he does make things happen with his feet.
He does.
And I think the key for him in terms of, you know, what his career is going to be is how much he decides to take off and run. Because if he is, if he skews more to the Russell Wilson side than the Robert Griffin side, I think he's going to last a lot longer. Because you can have incredible improvisational skills, but the NFL is not college football. Yeah, sooner or later, he is going to get destroyed
by
someone.
That's what I was just about to say. Longevity, that's another thing.
Durability is the number one red flag with Johnny
Football. Because, like I said, I always go back to Mike Vick. I mean, Mike Vick, he just didn't – I mean, he wouldn't slide. You got to slide, man. That's the thing with Vick. If he slid, if he slided his entire career, Mike Vick might be in great health. I guarantee he would be in better health than he is right now. I tell you that. So that's the thing. When you talk about these quarterbacks, especially this pro style that we, you know, you see with, you know, Colin Kaepernick and guys that like to get out the pocket and do things. And we're seeing a lot of quarterbacks who can do that. But you got to be smart, too. And you got to realize that, hey, I'm very good at getting outside the pocket, but you can't be taking hits like that, man, especially if you're a quarterback. Guys, we have a caller really quick. Dave. Dave, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Happy Friday, guys. How you guys doing?
Happy Friday, my brother.
Yep.
First of all, Larry Brown, in my humble opinion, is one of the best coaches to have ever walked the hardwood. I mean, he wins at every turn. He takes water and turns it into wine. Mm-hmm. It's just a shame that he seems to rub administration or upper management or whatever you want to call it the wrong way. But he is the ultimate, I mean, ultimate teacher.
Right.
You know, if there was a high school that would that could pony up $1 million, he would be in heaven. You know,
right.
He's just that type of coach. Secondly, Johnny Football. Johnny Football is a very good quarterback. But what I don't know, me personally, is if he has a, if he's cerebral as a Drew Brees. And what I don't know if he can take a lick as a Brett Favre could. I don't know that about Johnny Football. We will see.
Mm-hmm.
One thing he will do is put butts in the seat. He is a circus. He is a show.
Right. That is very, very true. Hey, thanks a lot, Dave, for the call.
Thanks. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, and I think when you look at it, I mean, we all know the mighty dollar talks, guys. And if you have – some franchises are so much in the dumps right now, they're just looking for somebody to come to the stadium. You know what I mean? And sometimes – and that's why I think, you know, with the – you know, with some franchises, when they looked at Tebow, they saw dollar signs to a degree. You know what I mean? I think teams are going to see that too. But to compare Tebow and Johnny Football, I think is unfair to Johnny Football because I think they're totally two different players.
Playing wise.
As far as hype wise, definitely comparable.
Oh yeah,
because
for
they
sure.
Will.
It's the only comparison.
Yeah, exactly. Because they will put money in your pocket. Okay, let's be honest here. So I think he will have success. I think Johnny Football will have success at the next level. How long that success lasts is in his hands, though, because he's got to realize that you, the NFL, everybody's big, fast, and strong in the NFL. And like Dave just said, can he take a lick? I don't want him taking licks. If I'm the upper management, who wants your quarterback taking licks like that? You got to slide. That's the biggest thing with me.
And also, who is around him? We've seen so many rookie quarterbacks come into so many bad situations from Jamarcus Russell at Oakland. Oof. Granted, different players, but we can go on and on about all the great hyped-up quarterbacks in college that have gotten into sticky situations with really bad personnel in the league.
I agree.
And it has never worked out, and it's just too bad to see.
Yeah. I totally agree with you on that, guys. All right, well, 3 minutes left. Let's reflect a little bit, fellas. Reflection Friday, where we look at some of the biggest sports stories of the week and tell you what our favorite moment was here on Current Sports. Alex, we'll start with you, man. Favorite
man,
moment.
You know what was great and something I didn't realize was Lansing baseball with Joe McDonald. I mean, seeing what kind of baseball training goes on in the area. Being from Metro Detroit and you from Detroit, I wasn't familiar with this baseball facility that they have up here in Lansing.
It's unbelievable.
Incredible to hear about what kind of training and the kind of athlete and which athletes come through here.
Yeah.
That was great. In terms of storyline, love the debate today about Johnny Football. Love that. yeah. And the show yesterday, I missed the show. I did not catch it, but from what I've heard, it was great.
Oh, with Tim Bogracki.
Oh,
yeah,
Bogracki's.
Tim was great. Yeah, Tim was
a
good guest.
From, you know, I see him. We see him a lot at the MSU basketball
games. Yeah, I got a lot
games.
Of tweets, too. Tom Crawford. Shout out to Tom Crawford, who was a co-host with Jack Ebling on Travel Jack. He tuned in yesterday and really enjoyed it.
Excited to watch the show.
Yeah, Tim is a great guest. Matt.
All right, well, we kind of missed April Fool's Day.
We did, man. I'm so upset about that.
So my favorite moment, and it's on YouTube, Chris Peterson, the new Washington Huskies football coach, decided to play a prank on the team introduced new uniforms for the team. They were absolutely hideous. They had a very tiny W logo on the chest. They had dogs written on the butt. Like,
really?
You see those shorts from, like, Victoria's Secret that have pink on the butt?
Yeah,
this
yeah,
had
yeah,
dogs
yeah.
on the
uh-huh.
butt.
Boy shorts,
and
yeah.
the players are all just sitting there mortified at what they have to wear. Finally, he says it's April Fool's Day, and everybody just you can see this huge sigh of relief with
right.
like 85 people. It's
some,
really
some
funny.
Laughter?
Very
some
enjoyable.
Laughter? Oh, man.
A little bit of laughter.
That's
little bit of laughter.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
I did not see that. Yeah, I'm so upset we missed April Fool's on the show because we had a whole plan. I remember talking back in the day about how we're going to just do our headliners as like a kind of a black sheep type moment where we just had phony story after phony story. Oh,
there's always next year.
There's always next year, man. Okay, well, my favorite discussion, I guess, would have to be definitely the Spencer Haywood discussion yesterday. I thought that was a great, insightful discussion, guys. But yeah, great week on the show. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKRX Lansing. As always, take care, have one fantastic weekend, and hey, be easy, people.